Okay. What I want to talk about for the next couple of weeks is the question of ta'amei ha-mitzvot, let's call them Hebrew ta'amei ha-mitzvot, which really boils down to the question of the reasons for the commandments. And that question seems to me, we can begin by trying to by trying to break it down into its component parts. In other words, the question of ta'amei ha-mitzvot. And it seems to me that we can break it down into a couple of questions. In other words, what people mean by a reason or by meaning in mitzvot might be different depending on what they're looking for. Some people might be looking for individual meaning or communal meaning. Some people might be looking for fun. Some people might be looking for sense of what they call in Hebrew mashma'ut, more like what they call in English meaning in life or spirituality. And the nature of the question, the assumptions that some of the sources that we're going to be reading start with about the nature of the question are going to it's something we're going to have to pay attention to about how they differ of what kind of meaning or what kind of reason it is that they're looking for. Secondly, we might also talk at another level in terms of a distinction between general meaning and specific meaning. We could talk about meaning of a particular mitzvah. What is the meaning behind a lulav or an etrog? What is the meaning behind Shabbat? Or we could talk about meaning in a very broad sense. What is the purpose of it all? What is our ideas that lie behind the whole thing? And perhaps the place to start. It looks like the sources that I tried to send to people did not yet come through. How many of you do have the sources? Does anybody have them? Let me know if you do. Either through the chat or orally. Rich just sent those. It may take a few minutes. It's taking a little while. To get sent, so I'm going to try to read them carefully, and I want to kind of divide our discussion over the next couple of weeks in more or less chronologically, beginning with the Middle Ages. There are discussions of this in older periods, in the period of Chazal, the sages, and in as well as in perhaps to some degree even in Tanakh itself, in the Bible itself, but I want to begin with the Middle Ages, and I want to continue into the modern period after a series of toward the end, but move more or less chronologically. And the reason for that is simply because the sources, when we're dealing with the Middle Ages and the modern period, are a little more in the Psukim you get a handful of mentions here and there that particular rewards you get for particular meaning, but will lengthen your days. In the Chazal, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, in the Midrash, you'll get stories, incidents, a handful of reflections, occasionally even a Midrash, like the Gemara's discussion of Ha'omer. If somebody thinks that the reason for not taking the mother bird, is to be have mercy on the mother, that's a mistake. But really, it's kind of scattered and hard to pin down. In the Middle Ages, Jews began kind of more systematic, organized thinking as a response to Greek thought and as a response to philosophy to try to make some sense or give an accounting of ta'amei ha-mitzvot together with a whole series of other questions, and therefore the sources are a little more organized and therefore to some degree a little more accessible for our purposes. Now, so I want to begin with Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim, and I want to read a passage from the Moreh Nevuchim from the Guide of the Perplexed in chapter 3, chapter 51. Essentially the middle section of section 3 deals with the question of Ta'amei HaMitzvot at length in 20 some odd chapters, and I just want to read a passage from the beginning of chapter 51 of Moreh Nevuchim. And I'll read slowly. I'm sorry if there was a technical glitch and the sources didn't get to people. Here's what it says. There is a group of human beings who consider it a grievous thing that causes should be given for any law. What would please them most is that the intellect would not find omissions. What compels them to feel this is a sickness that they find in their souls, a sickness to which they are unable to give utterance, furnish a satisfactory account. So the Rambam, in his discussion of Ta'amei HaMitzvot, well, at least for our purposes, begins, this is already toward the end of the discussion, but his position is, he rejects wholeheartedly the notion that one should not and cannot find reasons for mitzvot. But I guess we ought to really be taking a step back and saying, Rambam clearly rejects this, right? He refers to the notion that there is no meaning for the commandments as a sickness in their souls. So I guess the first question we ought to be asking ourselves is, why would anybody think that? In other words, Rambam polemicizes against this idea that the mitzvot are devoid of meaning, but why would anybody think that to begin with? Any ideas? Somebody want to chime in on the chat? What might motivate somebody to say such a thing? Or if you have audio, can you chime in? I'm not sure this will work. To kind of get a discussion going, if we can do it, at least in the chat or verbally for those who have access to it. But if not, I'll keep talking. What might motivate somebody to say such a thing? Why would anybody think against Rambam? That mitzvot are devoid. Okay, others were looking for reasons. What do you mean others were looking for reasons? Others were looking for reasons and didn't find them? It seems to me that the first fundamental motivation is a religious motivation. And Rambam even echoes this on the following page. He explains, they think that if those laws were useful in this existence and had been given to us for this or that reason, it would be as if they derived from the reflections of some intelligent being. If, however, there is a thing for which the intellect could not find any meaning at all, and that does not lead to something useful, it indubitably derives from God. But a reflection of man would not lead to such a thing. In other words, Rambam's challenge, what Rambam is rejecting here, is a response to a religious perspective. Mitzvot ought not have any meaning. It is better religiously for us to assume that mitzvot did have meaning, we would have to conclude that they were given by some, in other words, and to give it a kind of a more modern twist, perhaps, that the motivation for doing mitzvot is first and foremost for the goal that intelligent being has set out to accomplish. And then you have to ask yourself the question, whether or not performing mitzvot for the sake of what they accomplish is in fact service of God, whether that is really a religious event, whether that is a religious act. Because, fine, any function, really the term that Rambam uses here is useful. And it's important for us to focus on that term. That if these laws were useful, then we might be motivated to do these mitzvot for the goal of getting, for the sake of achieving that goal. And then we would not be motivated for a desire to serve God, or a desire to achieve some religious end. And so, Rambam is responding to that. Rambam is rejecting the notion that, or if we put two and two together, Rambam is rejecting the notion that in order for mitzvot to have religious significance, they have to be done for the motivation of serving God and not for any other motivation. That is what Rambam is rejecting. Now, we should keep that notion in mind, the idea that mitzvot are, the idea that Rambam is rejecting, namely that mitzvot are to be done exclusively for the sake of serving God. We should keep that in mind when we speak later of Yishael Leibovitz, the Israeli philosopher, who took that position kind of to the extreme. Now here Rambam is also hinting at a number of language that he uses to describe what he thinks mitzvot are useful. In other words, Rambam believes that mitzvot actually do have some purpose beyond... Rambam is looking for, when he talks about mitzvot, something useful, something that accomplishes a particular end. Or, in the language of Aristotle, from whom Rambam is borrowing some of his language here, Rambam is looking for the final cause. Aristotle distinguishes between several different kinds of causes, four in particular, one of which is the final cause, which means what goal is it designed to achieve. If things happen in the world, people do things in the world, because there is a goal that they're designed to achieve. And so if we build a table, we would say that the final cause of the table is the desire to have a flat surface upon which to write and eat. And here, Rambam is trying to figure out what is the final cause of the mitzvot. And he draws the conclusion later on in the passage. Every commandment from among these 600 exists with a view to, and then he's going to list a series of goals. And we'll get back to the series of goals later. We'll have to kind of run around and come back to it. But in the meantime, every commandment from among these 613 commandments exists for some reason. According to Rambam, every single mitzvah in the Torah of the 613 is there for a reason, has a particular goal, goal that it's trying to accomplish, a final cause, a reason why somebody would want it to come about. We'll go back to what those are later on, but now I want to take a step even further back. And I want to go to Rambam's discussion, not only of his rejection of the idea that mitzvot do not have reasons, but go on to his idea, to his discussion of not only the particular goals of particular mitzvot, but to the goals of the Torah as a whole. And here we move backwards to chapter 27 of the Moreh Nevuchim of the Guide of the Perplexed. And he says, the law as a whole aims at two things, the welfare of the soul and the welfare of the body. As for the welfare of the soul, well, Rambam begins by distinguishing between two goals, not of a particular, but of the Torah as a whole. The Torah is designed, according to Rambam, to accomplish two things, the welfare of the body. As for the welfare of the soul, he says, it consists in the multitudes acquiring correct opinions corresponding to their respective capacity. In other words, what he means by welfare of the soul is knowledge, teaching people the truth. And this follows as consistent with Rambam's larger position regarding the goal of Judaism, regarding human perfection. As a whole, according to Rambam, human perfection is defined as intellectual perfection. The goal, or the achieving human perfection, means knowing, understanding. And therefore, Rambam defines that as welfare of the soul. As for welfare of the body, continuing to read from the Rambam, it comes about by the improvement of their ways of living with one another. This is achieved through two things. One of them is the abolition of their wronging each other. The second thing consists in their acquisition by every human individual of moral qualities that are useful for life and society. In other words, Rambam is distinguished between welfare of the soul, which is achieving spiritual, religious perfection, achieving knowledge, knowledge of Torah, knowledge of mitzvot, knowledge of understanding, I apologize to those of you who I tried to send the sources to. It seems that I don't know why my email is giving me trouble, and I'm not going to try to solve it at the moment. I apologize for that. Again, we were talking about welfare of the soul and welfare of the body. He's dividing the larger goal of Torah into two pieces. The welfare of the body he's defining here as improving their ways of living with another. Now, the first thing that ought to come, that we ought to find in distinguishing here between welfare of the soul and welfare of the body, is that he defines these in entirely social and political terms. In other words, he's not merely saying, as we might imagine, that welfare of the soul is some kind of individual, personal, spiritual achievement that you get through knowledge of Torah, through keeping mitzvot, nor is welfare of the body what we might imagine an individual's personal health, but welfare of the soul and welfare of the body are social and political elements. In other words, welfare of the body, as we've said, is improving their ways of living with one another. And welfare of the soul is not only in knowing truth, in achieving spiritual perfection through knowing truth, but rather the multitudes acquiring correct opinions corresponding to their respective capacity. In other words, it's not merely a question of an individual achieving spiritual growth. It is a question of the community as a whole, the multitude achieving the kind of spiritual goals that it can. Rambam's choice to understand the goal of mitzvot in social and political terms has very, very broad implications for really the entire tenor of what he considers Torah about, what he considers what his basic religious sensibilities are. In other words, his religious sensibilities are not individualistic. They revolve around the community. They revolve around what the community as a whole can accomplish. And therefore, his entire notion, as we're going to see, of mitzvot, the reasons, the kinds of reasons he's going to give, are not primarily going to be about individuals as such. They are going to be about the community. Okay, so far, so good. Questions? If anybody has questions, chime in. Otherwise, I'll plow ahead. Okay. The next step in Rambam's argument, continuing in chapter 27, he says, know that as between these two aims, one is indubitably greater in nobility, namely the welfare of the soul, while the second aim, I mean the welfare of the body, is prior in nature and time. That is to say, that according to the Rambam, there is a relationship between the two goals. There is a relationship between the goals of welfare of the soul and welfare of the body, of communal spiritual success and communal material success, or communal political success, and that is that the goal of welfare of the soul is more important, but the goal of welfare of the body is prior to it, chronologically and conceptually. The argument that Rambam has hidden in that suggestion, in that argument, is that the individuals cannot achieve religious success outside the context of a stable and ethical community. And this is, it seems to me, of great significance in understanding what it is that Rambam sees the Torah is trying to accomplish. Torah is trying to accomplish the creation of a stable and ethical society, not merely because a stable and ethical society is valuable, but because a stable and ethical society is a means toward the end of individuals achieving religious success. Individuals cannot achieve religious success outside of a communal and political environment. The person cannot say, I will go off to my cave, or I will go off to my Beit Midrash, or I will go off by myself, meditate upon the truths, meditate upon God, meditate upon spiritual things, and be left alone. That person's ability to achieve individual religious success is dependent on a stable and ethical society. Okay. And that leads us back to the passage that we had actually begun with. Let me just find it here. The passage that we had begun with, which we had been reading at the beginning. The sentence that reads, every commandment from among these 613 commandments exists for some reason. In other words, Rambam has combined two goals. Goal number one is communal political, and goal number two is spiritual, with the claim, the distinction between the political and the spiritual, he's combined that with the claim that every mitzvah has a reason. And we're going to have to begin to look, as we continue and look at the other thinkers, how they stand regarding both questions. Both the question of whether the goal of Torah as a whole can be defined in political terms, and the question of whether every individual mitzvah has a meaning and what it is. And Rambam then lists in the passage that we had begun with, after saying that every mitzvah has a reason of some kind, he continues and describes what they are. Either with a view to communicating a correct opinion or putting an end to an unhealthy opinion. In other words, there are some mitzvot, the goal of which is to communicate a correct opinion. Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hoteiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. The mitzvah, according to the Rambam, is the mitzvah to believe in one God. That mitzvah teaches a correct opinion. Or putting an end to an unhealthy opinion. Or eliminating Avodah Zarah, the prohibition of serving idolatry, eliminates an unhealthy spiritual opinion. He continues with his list of possible reasons for mitzvot. Communicating a rule of justice or warding off an injustice, teaching a right way to behave in financial matters, in matters of justice, in maintaining a stable society, warding off an injustice, endowing man with a noble moral quality, or warning them against an evil moral quality. Thus, all the commandments are bound up with three things: opinions, moral qualities, and political civic actions. if Rambam is going to claim, as he does, that every single mitzvah in the Torah has a reason, has a, not only a reason, it's a reason that he's defined as function, it does something, it's good for something, and the goal is, as he's defined, welfare of the soul and welfare of the body, then every mitzvah among the 613 has to be able to fit into either opinions teaching spiritual truths that are what he's called welfare of the soul, moral qualities, and political civic actions. Political civic actions because they maintain the stable society without which spiritual perfection cannot be achieved. And moral qualities because, as Rambam says elsewhere, a person cannot be a good civic individual without moral qualities. A person not only cannot be a good civic individual, a person cannot live well in society without moral qualities, a person cannot be a spiritual person without moral qualities. A person cannot achieve truth, a person cannot know what is need to be known to achieving spiritual health without good moral qualities. Good moral qualities are the thing that help people get from where they are to where they want to be spiritually and religious. Okay. Questions up to now. If you have questions, please do not hesitate to say something. Otherwise, I will keep yapping. Okay. Let's reflect for a second on the notion that Rambam has suggested that every mitzvah plays a function. That is a highly challenging and highly difficult position to maintain. What do you mean that every mitzvah has a function? There are mitzvot, which is fairly clear, and you can identify in Rambam's terms what the function is. There are mitzvot that you can look at and say, okay, that makes a fair amount of sense, right? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otzeiticha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, that mitzvah teaches a spiritual truth without which individuals cannot achieve spiritual perfection. I understand the goal of that. It helps people in some direct way. The recitation of Shema helps people in some way. If we say Shema on a daily basis, we can help internalize the religious truths that are reflected in Shema. I understand the mitzvah of not lying in court, of perjury. The prohibition of perjury makes sense if you want to achieve a stable society. That makes sense. Then there are a whole series of other mitzvot that are difficult to pin down. The most obvious example that everybody likes to reflect on is the example of shatnez, is the example of the prohibition of mixing wool and linen garments. What is that good for? What does it accomplish in terms of Rambam's goals? It doesn't appear to teach truth. It doesn't appear to teach an opinion. It doesn't appear to teach a political civic virtue. There's no reason why... hold on, Rosella. I'll get to your question in a second. But the prohibition of shatnez does not appear to teach a civic virtue, nor does it appear to teach a moral quality. There's no reason why my coat that has woolen linen in it is somehow morally inferior, doesn't affect my personality, my moral compass for wearing this particular garment. And once Rambam has made the claim that every mitzvah has a purpose, has a function, he's got to be able to explain to us what that function is. Okay, Priscilla had asked, I might have missed that, but is he providing the reason for each mitzvah? Yes. We can't get into it, but much of the middle section of the third chelek, of the third part of the Moreh Nebuchim, is designed through going through 14 categories of mitzvot, which line up roughly with the 14 books of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, the Rambam's Code of Law. And he goes through the major categories of mitzvot in each one and tries to define what function it plays, either in terms of opinions, moral qualities, or civic actions. Does that answer your question? I mean, it's an answer that's not an answer. It's an answer that says he is going to try to do it. He just doesn't do it. He just does not do it or rather, we're not going to read every example, but he does it. I do want to take a look at a couple of examples, because they're examples that point to the way in which Rambam is pushed into a corner by the theory he's trying to advocate. In other words, Rambam has taken a very extreme position. The extreme position is every mitzvah has a function. Every single religious act we perform has a function. And he's going to, that extreme position is going to run him into a problem. And the problem is that it doesn't appear to work. And it doesn't appear to work at two levels. One level is a whole series of mitzvot that are hard to figure out, like shatnez. The example that Rambam is particularly concerned about is the example of korbanot. And we'll talk for a second about why he's so concerned about the example of korbanot. And he's also going to run into a problem because what about the details? In other words, generally speaking, if I want to teach a good moral quality, so I could teach a good moral quality by making an obligation, I don't know if this is a great example, but prohibiting telling nasty things about people. And yet if you look at Hilchot Lashon Hara, at least the way they've developed today, they're extremely complicated, with all kinds of technical details. What are the technical details good for? More than that. That may not be a great example, because there, at least the technical details, you can fold back into some claim about the limits of prohibited speech. Yes, generally I don't say not nice things about people, but if I am under circumstances where my goal is not to say nasty things, but actually to prevent a future wrongdoing, or if my goal in talking about these mitzvot is, or if my goal in talking about somebody is to prevent a future wrongdoing, and if I'm devoid of any personal interest and sense of ego that's involved. So there's a way of folding those details back into the apparent goal of prohibiting, you know, tale-bearing. On the other hand, what about Shabbat? Because I could associate Shabbat, if I wanted to, with the notion that it is it reminds us of the creation of the world. I could associate Shabbat with the first category, the category of commandments that are bound up with opinions. Shabbat somehow teaches me the idea that God created the world in 7 days. When I celebrate Shabbat, or when I desist from performing constructive activity on Shabbat. But it's hard to figure out why separating the bones from a piece of fish or the seeds from my watermelon is related directly or indirectly to the question of teaching me that truth. What do I need all the details for? So Rambam has kind of backed himself into a corner, into his extreme position. Before we talk about the details of the way in which he's backed himself into that corner in terms of his extreme position that every mitzvah has a reason, to be more precise, every mitzvah has a function designed to achieve welfare of the body and welfare of the soul, we should also stop and think about the religious sensibility that underlies the claim that mitzvah observance is goal-oriented. In other words, if we go back to the original passage that we started with, those people who have, according to Rambam, a sickness of the soul that leads them to the conclusion that rational mitzvot could not be because that would be a-religious. Keeping rational mitzvot would have some other goal in mind, not service of God. Really, what's underlying Rambam's claim is a conception of God and his relationship to the world. A conception, number one, of God as a rational being, number one, and number two, that rational beings behave in goal-oriented ways. Rambam has a lot to say about what we can say legitimately or not say about God, what we can know or not know about God. But Rambam, maybe not the ultimate rationalist of the Jewish Middle Ages, but he's a pretty consistent rationalist. Rambam conceives of God as a rational being and conceives of reason as being identified in in purposeful activity. And really what's underlying the claim that he rejects, that mitzvot don't have a reason, is at some level a different conception of God. God perhaps as arbitrary commander, or worship, therefore. Worship, therefore, is acts of obedience. But if the connection between the individual and God for Rambam, certainly this is correct according to Rambam, if the connection between the individual and God according to Rambam is a rational connection, and if reason is reflected in purposeful activity, then to make sense out of Torah and to make sense out of our relationship to God, we have to find in it purposefulness, goal-orientedness, an attempt to accomplish something. And therefore, Rambam's notion of God as a rational being and therefore purposeful forces him into the position that every mitzvah must have a reason. And if there is a mitzvah that does not have a purpose, does not have a function, then it is irrational. We have diminished from the rationality of Torah, we have diminished by implication from the rationality of God, and that is no good for a rationalist. And we have to keep this in mind, because next week when we pay some attention to anti- and non-rationalists, namely Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Rambam, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Maharal, we're going to have to pay attention to the idea that their conception of mitzvah is really a window into their conception of God and to a conception of how it is that we are capable of relating to God. And Rambam, the rationalist, sees our relationship to God in rational terms, sees God himself as a rational being, and therefore kind of confines or is forced into the position that Torah itself must reflect rationality, rationality being defined as purposefulness, goal-oriented. Now, this bind that Rambam is in terms of the details of the mitzvot, as well as those mitzvot which do not have an apparent reason, really form the place in which Rambam's position comes to be attacked. I'm reluctant to say the weakness in Rambam's position, because there are actually certain advantages, it seems to me, for the position that Rambam is staking, especially for contemporaries, but it's certainly the place where Rambam is going to be attacked. In chapter 32, he reflects on the problem of korbanot. And korbanot are a serious problem for Rambam, because Rambam cannot explain what korbanot are good for. Not only can he not explain what korbanot are good for, the assumptions that appear to underlie korbanot are in opposition to the values that Rambam holds dear. In other words, korbanot, sacrifices, seem to work to some degree under the assumption that God benefits from the death of animals that are done for his purpose. Otherwise, what is the point of killing animals, sprinkling their blood in various places upon the altar, giving out the skin and the meat in some cases to various players in this to eat under particular circumstances? The image that one gets of this, and that's an image that's reflected at some level in the Psukim, in the language Reach Nichoach LaHashem, a sweet smell to God, is a God who at some level benefits from the sacrifice of these animals. And that strikes Rambam as a downright pagan idea. And in fact, to modern and contemporary ears, there's something highly counterintuitive about the idea that we serve God and we expect to serve God and we long for the day in which we will serve God through animal sacrifice, or even through non-animal sacrifice for that matter. What is it that we think we're accomplishing by killing animals? And Rambam is particularly bothered by this because he has such a rational image, an irrationalistic image of God and our relationship to God. Kinds of mitzvot that seem to work under pagan assumptions would be counterproductive in exactly the purposes that Rambam has identified as the purposes of mitzvot. If the goal of mitzvot, or one of the goals of mitzvot, is to teach true opinions, then a mitzvah that works in the other direction that seems to teach an untrue opinion, that God somehow requires us to kill these animals, that God benefits in some way from the sacrifice of these animals. This untrue, almost pagan opinion is highly, highly problematic. And that pushes Rambam in chapter 32 to a position that Rambam is often quoted on this, and it has very, very broad implications for how Rambam backs himself, if you will, out of the corner that he's created for himself by claiming that all mitzvot have a reason. And he says, at the time, the way of life, meaning at the time that the Torah was given, the way of life generally accepted and customary in the whole world, and the universal service upon which we were brought up, consisted in offering various species of living things in the temples in which the images were set up, and in worshipping the latter, and in burning incense before them. His wisdom, meaning God's wisdom, and his gracious ruse, which is manifest in regard to all his creatures, did not require that he give us the law prescribing the rejection, abandonment, and abolition of all these kinds of worship. In other words, the generally accepted service of God at the time when the Torah was given was through korbanot. And God, in his wisdom, did not require us to have a set of mitzvot that would reject, abandon, and abolish all of that kind of worship. For one could not then conceive the acceptance of such a law, considering the nature of man, which always likes that to which it is accustomed. And at the time, this would have been similar to the appearance of a prophet in these times, who, calling upon the people to worship God, would say, God has given you a law forbidding you to pray to him, to fast, to call upon him for help in misfortune. Your worship should consist solely in meditating without any words at all. Okay. Rambam has suggested a highly provocative contention that some of the mitzvot, in order to understand the goal that they're trying to accomplish, you have to look at the historical conditions. And not only look at the historical conditions, but at the anthropology, the assumptions about human beings that lie at the bottom of that. If you look at ancient times, everybody served God through the method, or served their idols through the method of korbanot. And it is not possible, given human nature, it is not possible to abandon that entire kind of worship and begin something else entirely. And Rambam's example there is telling. It is as if a prophet would come today and say, you must serve God without prayer. You must serve God without fasting and calling out to him in times of need. And the reason why Rambam, there's two reasons, I think, why Rambam gives that example. One is, at a philosophical level, he's hinting that prayer, verbal prayer, may itself be in the same category as korbanot, in the sense that under today's circumstances they are necessary, but an ideal form of worship that we are eventually going to get to might either do away with them, or, to be more consistent within Rambam's position, do them, but only as a technical requirement when the real goal is elsewhere. And the second reason Rambam mentions that is because it hits home just how difficult it would be, just how much Rambam is convinced that it has to be this way. In other words, it really would not work if you told religious people today, be religious without prayer. So that would be rather shocking. That is not something we could handle. Even if prayer, verbal prayer, is not the ideal kind of worship of God, that is not the kind of thing we are capable of handling today. It is not the kind of thing that the people at the time of Rambam were capable of handling. And Rambam is trying to suggest that the elimination of korbanot for them was similar to the elimination of prayer for religious people at his time. Kind of drive home the idea at just how difficult it is for God to have given a commandment that achieves his ideal endpoint goal. But God is, if you will, a pragmatist. You have to move slowly. You have to move gradually. Humans cannot take it. In other words, not only is God purposeful, not only is God rational in the sense of being purposeful, but he is rational in the sense of accomplishing his goals efficiently given the raw resources that are available to him. And if the raw resources available to God are human nature as they play themselves out in history, then that is what God has to work with. And if what he wants to accomplish is silent meditation upon the nature of God, is spirituality that's devoted to that kind of meditation, then you can only build humanity up through it. In other words, not only is Torah a political phenomenon for Rambam, it's an historical phenomenon as well. The goals that the rational mitzvot are designed to achieve are to play themselves out not only within the community, but also over the course of history. Now, this is an extremely provocative idea. I'm assuming that if anybody has any questions, they will type up in the chat. In the meantime, this is an extremely provocative idea. It's an extremely provocative idea because it's very difficult to figure out where to draw the line. In other words, once I've opened the door to the idea that mitzvot are rational, political, but historically conditioned, then I open up the door for the possibility that as history changes, mitzvot themselves might change. Now, Rambam closes that door as quickly as he opens it, but he only closes the door with, to some degree, a kind of technicality. His technicality is, and this is one of Rambam's Ikare Emunah, one of Rambam's dogmas, is you have to believe that mitzvot will not change and cannot change. Whatever one makes about Rambam's reference to that particular dogma, it is clear from the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, from the Rambam's Code of Halakha, that under no circumstances was he prepared to declare that mitzvot would no longer be binding at a particular time in history. But it is a rather radical notion, and it's hard philosophically to understand why, in the language of Chazal, in the language of the Gemara, batla ta'ama batla mitzvah, if the purpose of the mitzvah, if the goal of the mitzvah is no longer accomplished, as Torah has played itself out through history, so what exactly is the need to continue to practice it? And this has been the kind of weak point in Rambam's argument that has made him subject to attack from his own time until today. But it should be noted that there's something almost intriguing in this possibility. Recently on the Lookstein Center at Bar-Ilan University runs an email discussion group for Jewish educators. In the last week or so, there's been a discussion of topics that are difficult to teach for moral reasons. How do you deal with certain aspects of the role of women in halacha? How do you deal with certain aspects of slavery in halacha, of polygamy? Ideas that we find difficult morally to stomach today, but are either tolerated by the halacha or required by the mitzvot. And some of the suggestions that were batted around about how to teach this difficult material is to look back to the Rambam as a potential place of solution. Perhaps we can go back to the Rambam and say these mitzvot, which we find morally problematic and we find at least morally challenging, counterintuitive to our moral intuitions, perhaps we can turn to the Rambam to get some solutions, to get some answers, to get some problems, and suggest the possibility that what the Torah was doing with some of its stance on women's issues or some of its stance on slavery was trying to make the best of a difficult situation. And just as Rambam says about Korbanot, God preferred to take a problematic kind of worship, namely Korbanot, which his people could handle, and redirect them from an idolatrous purpose to a monotheistic purpose, so too perhaps some of those mitzvot are the laws of slavery are designed to take that some of the mitzvot are designed to move the community from a situation of extreme slavery, of dangerous slavery, of painful, of kind of abusive slavery, and make it more moral. What is he saying about kashrut? Largely about kashrut. What in particular about kashrut are you asking? Largely about kashrut, he thinks that kashrut is about developing moral individual personalities, about controlling the appetite. A good civic person and a good spiritual person would be one who has control over his appetites, and kashrut is about limiting the kind of food you can eat, when you can eat it, how you can eat it, and creating a kind of a controlled consumption, controlling of the appetites. But actually, raising the question, Rasal's question about kashrut, actually raises the next weak point, or the point where Rambam comes to be attacked. And for that, we have to skip backwards to chapter 26, to section 3, chapter 26. Where he says, and here we get not to the problem of mitzvot that don't seem to have a reason, and incidentally, we gave the example of shatnez. Rambam will say the same thing about shatnez. The reason why we are prohibited from wearing certain kinds of garments is because those are garments that were once associated with idolatry, giving it an historically conditioned position. And here we get the second issue. Know that wisdom rendered it necessary, or if you will say that necessity occasioned, that there should be particulars for which no cause can be found. It was impossible in regard to the law that there should be nothing of this class in it. In other words, the other issue, Rasala had raised the question about kashrut. Well, if the goal of kashrut is to achieve a controlled appetite, what about all these technical details? Particular ways in which we slaughter animals, the amount of time we wait between meat and milk, the particular ways in which we conceive of taste being transferred from one food to another to make it prohibited. Why is it that we determine that a prohibited item can be considered canceled, can be considered batel, if it is less than 1/60? There are a whole series of details for which, Rambam says, there are particulars, details for which no cause can be found. And here Rambam is hinting at, and we just have a minute or two to go into it, but Rambam is hinting at the notion that there can be a legal system, by definition, requires details. It requires details and consistency. All the details have to fit in. There is no way to deal with a legal system that is both binding and not detailed, and therefore, once you get into details, some of them have to be arbitrary. You have to have a way of determining what is the substance of these prohibited items, and when do I consider a substance to be transferred from one thing to another. There has to be a way of dealing with it. Once I've determined that I'm going to bring sacrifices, I have to determine what animals and with what frequency. Otherwise, I don't have a legal system. I just have a loose confederate of ideas. And here, again, Rambam is going back to the political notion and the link that he sees between the political community and the spiritual religious success of each individual, and saying, in politics, within a political community, things have to be governed by law. And law has to have details. Otherwise, it is not functional. So there are these kind of two ways in which Rambam's extreme rationalism, in which his insistence that every mitzvah has a purpose and a goal, and is an attempt to define it. The two weaknesses that he runs into are the various places where those goals do not seem to be achieved, whether in terms of mitzvot that don't fit, and then he is, at least in the Moreh Nevuchim, willing to adopt a historical position, and also the details, which don't always fit in to the goal. And those are the points of weakness, and Rambam kind of has to argue that they are to some degree historically necessary in relation to certain mitzvot, and the details themselves, given the political context of how he sees and the communal context of how he sees halakha playing out, is necessary within the mitzvot. Okay, as Alan has reminded us, we are approaching 12 o'clock rapidly. What I want to continue doing next week, I have every reason to suspect that I will be here, but much to my dismay, I'm going on reserve duty this week. My commander has promised me that I will be home on Sunday to deal with the class. If something changes, I will let people know, but I have every reason to suspect that I will be here. What I want to look at next week is to do a comparison of the rational position with the irrational and the irrational position adopted by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and Sefer HaKuzari and by Maharal in Tiferet Yisrael, and begin to think through in the same way that the extreme rationalism of Rambam led him to a particular place. Look at how the irrationalism and the irrationalism of Maharal and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi lead them to a different kind of place, and see whether that can help us map the territory of the different strategies for making sense out of mitzvot and the strengths and weaknesses of both of them. Thank you for listening. If anybody has any questions, go ahead. Otherwise, it's been a pleasure, and we should virtually meet again a week from today. Yes, I will try to email the sources for next week, hopefully by tomorrow or by Tuesday, to somebody in the Torah in Motion office, and then they could forward them to you. I apologize. I thought I had them sent them to the office in a way that was transmittable. I guess it was not as easy as I thought they were, but I will try to get that in place by Tuesday. Rosella, you're quite welcome. Okay, anything else? Okay, tech support, have we covered what we needed to cover? Okay, so then I think we're ready to log out. Thank you for participating. If you have any questions, let me put my email into the chat so you can be in touch with me if you'd like. If you have any questions over the course of the week and you'd like to be in touch with me, you can email me at that address and I'll try to get back to you. Although beginning Wednesday, I may be out of communication. But again, it's been a pleasure, and have a Shavuot Tov and good week.